ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Warwick Hadfield's with us again for Warwick's Weekly Wrap, the WWW show of everything worth knowing in the sporting world. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
It's nice to be here, Philip.
First to Aussie rules, or Melbourne rules, maybe it is, and the admission of a great champion called Jason Dunstall, who's now to become an AFL legend.
Can I just tell you this? Jason Hadfield Dunstall, why I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him. And yes, it's you called it Melbourne rules, and that's how it was way back when, in the 1850s, when it was all drawn up at that pub across the road from the police park. And it's quite a story for Jason Dunstall, because he's the little boy from Queensland who made it, as Alan Jeans, his coach at Hawthorn, also referred to him occasionally. He also called him the fat boy from time to time as well. But if you go to, he went to Churchy, the Anglican grammar school in Brisbane. And when you look down the list of alumni in sport, it's extraordinary. Test cricketers, Olympians, and many, many Wallabies, but only two have gone to the AFL. And only one of those has got an exalted career like Jason Dunstall's. It's 269 games, 1,254 goals, four flags, three Coleman medals. And I think there is also what he's done in the game since then. He did serve as CEO at Hawthorn when the club really needed some strong leadership. And he also has had this career, along with Andrew Gaze and a few others, in this haphazard, I don't know what you call, some sort of post-match footy show. I rarely get to touch in on, but they're always doing stupid things to each other. It's sort of like Marx Brothers or something like that, a footballing version of Marx Brothers. But look, his contribution to the game is extraordinary. And when we say four flags, we should also remember there is a fifth one with Cooperoo. He made his debut playing in the Quaffle, and within a year, it was the leading goal scorer, and within 2 years, it won a flag. So it was pretty obvious that all the clubs, once that word gets out, as it does around the nation, about a talent like that, that someone would come a calling. And in fact, Alan Jeans signed him, they say, for about $10,000. And gee, I reckon Hawthorn got their return on investment.
Good investment.
Well, back in the day, when Alan Jeans and Gary Ayres and, the list goes on forever, the Hawthorn wives used to go shopping on a Saturday afternoon, come home with their bags from DJs and wherever else they'd been, and their first question was, how many did we win by today, darling? it was never in doubt, apparently. Look, you can see when Dunstall's played in four flags, Lee Matthews played in four, didn't he? Four, I think so, three or four, I can't remember, and all of those guys, Gary Ayres, two Norm Smith medals and whatever, they were just an astonishingly good team. Well coached, beautifully coached by Alan Jeans, who was a really, really, a terrific fellow, Alan Jeans. He was a policeman and very stern in many ways, but very, very loyal to his players. And he had this way of telling players they're about to be dropped. Mm-hmm. So he would ring them up or call them into a room and say, look, you're not been dropped for anything other than team balance. And if you've ever heard Alan Jeans speak, he spoke with this hypnotic voice. And when he said team balance, it was to make you feel better about yourself. after he finished coaching, he ended up playing bowls in Melbourne, very competitive bowls. Mm. And he was dropped from a team from a grand final. And Dermot Brereton could not wait to ring him up and say, team balance, Alan. Team balance.
That's very funny.
But anyway, Dunstall was very, very modestly yesterday, he said that he was on the end of this production line, he called it, the Hawthorn midfield and back line in those days. And all he had to do was be there in the right place to take the ball. But, having said that, it's quite a skill to be there in the right place and to take it, particularly when someone's trying to knock your head off.
Yeah, that's true. Forward tactics have changed a bit, I suppose, these days. But he was a big target, and he could execute.
I watched him even towards the end of his career when his knees were gone, and he just still had that ability to find a bit of space. And look, the other thing about him was he could kick straight. 1,254 goals, only Plugger Lockett and Coventry are ahead of him, and he really did want to chase down Lockett, but those knees gave out before he. I think he's about 30 or 40 goals short, but the knees gave out before he could get there. Yep. Yeah, look, a tremendous and a well-deserved accolade, this, to be a legend. I think it's number 32. There aren't that many.
Some are on their way out. Carl Dittrich, unfortunately, being pushed out.
Yes, yet another sad story of historic sex offences. It's like Barry Cable, who's also been removed from the AFL Hall of Fame after, well, it was a civil conviction or a civil case that forced Barry Cable out, but anyway, they're both Carl. It was a St Kilda player. So Carl was he was coached by Alan Jeans actually.
He was
at St Kilda, but missed the 1966 grand final because he was suspended, as he was for much of his playing career. But this is a sad way for everybody involved, and it's not just feeling sad for Carl Deaker, it's feeling sad for other people. It's a sad way for this all to end.
Sure. Rugby league has a habit of, well, coaches in rugby league love bagging referees as their excuses for losing. Desi Hasler doing it again.
Yeah, Desi Hasler and Ricky Stewart.
Ricky Stewart does that. That's his standard MO. Ricky.
Well, look, you know, you've only got to look at their backgrounds. Now, Des Hasler went to St Dom's in Penrith. Now, I played against St Dom's, and boy, golly, they were a hard side to play against. They were tough, they were resilient, and they never took a backward step. And because Ricky Stewart comes from Queanbeyan, which, all the locals who are listening down that part of the world, is also known as Struggle Town. I remember when David Campese was playing for the Wallabies, they called that change of pace of his a goose step. But my cousin Russell, who played with Queanbeyan, rang up and he said, "No, that's not what it's called down here. It's called the Struggle Town Shuffle." And you know, that's, you know, Queanbeyan has that that reputation of being a poor cousin, if you like, to Canberra itself, and they breathe them pretty tough. Anyway, after the Gold Coast lost to Canberra by a point in golden point time, and Desi Hasler blamed the referee for the loss, claiming that Chevy Stewart, no relation to Ricky, but he named after Chevy Chase. Apparently his parents were huge fans of Chevy Chase, so they named their young fella after him. He was offside when he charged down Kieran Foran's kick for the field goal, and then play went down the other end of the field, and Jamal Fogarty kicked the winning field goal for the Raiders. Mm. And then there was a bit of a barn. Not only were they bagging the refs, or in fact, never once in his life, Ricky Stewart was saying the refs didn't get it wrong, but apparently they had an exchange in the race as well. So it's good to see that these two boys are living up to their pedigree.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Now, in athletics, by the way, there's some interesting stories around athletics. Peter Boll is going to run for the green and gold in Paris at the Olympics, is he?
Yeah, he's been picked in a preliminary squad of 14 after the national championships.
Yeah,
in South Australia, they've named a few. He's not the only one. There are 13 others, but of course he's the interesting one because of all that's happened before with that, disaster of a botched positive test. And I use the word disaster knowing.
Disgraceful, actually, isn't it, the whole thing?
Well, it's the former head of WADA, David Howman, who is seen as one of the all-time great experts on drugs in sport. He called what had happened with what Sport Integrity Australia had done a disaster. Jane Fleming, the new head of Athletics Australia, has also been highly critical of it. And Annika Wells, the Minister for Sport, called on a full investigation into what went wrong, whether it was something in the lab, whether it was overzealous officials at Sport Integrity Australia.
What's your take
on it? overzealous officials at Sport Integrity Australia and a botched test. I think that Sport Integrity Australia has a lot to say sorry for, but at the moment there's been a WADA inquiry going on, and I've spent much of today trying to find out just where that is, and I've got a funny feeling that everyone's hoping that it's going to go away. And Peter Boll's selection, I guess, is I know I'm not the only person ringing around today to try and find out where this particular inquiry by this review by WADA is, but WADA was saying all the right things, and the Minister for Sport was saying all the right things about we've got to get to the bottom of this, and Jane Fleming doesn't want it to ever happen again. So hopefully something's going to come out of it all in the end. But look, it's really interesting. before every Olympics, I get the feeling, or I know, that they all start to talk up athletics going into the Olympics. We get a few people doing creating Australian records and so we get pretty excited, and then when they get there and they find the rest of the world's going a lot faster or jumping a lot higher. But you know, Matthew Denny in the discus, he's the Betty Cuthbert athlete of the year this year, and when I mentioned Betty Cuthbert, they're saying that this could be Australia's best ever track and field performance at Olympics since 1956.
We have heard this before, though, haven't we? I mean, because the problem is with athletics, isn't it? That it's you know, it's tricky because we were good at swimming. Swimming because swimming pools are expensive, and you know, a lot of countries can't build them. Everyone can run. Everyone can run, and the competition is incredibly fierce. Particularly when all the best runners in Australia are actively sought by other sports.
Well, that's the other thing. And in fact, Jane Fleming had some interesting things to say about that. And when she became head of Athletics Australia, she pointed out that, you know, the AFLW has come along and with its mighty media powerhouse force behind it has been able to attract all sorts of people. And she pointed out, as people in hockey have done and other sports like that have done for some time, that, you know, gender equality has been part and parcel of the sport for an awful long time. Having said all that, and even with the prize money they're now offering at the Paris Olympics.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this. What do you think about this? I mean, I don't know whether everyone's caught up with this. For the first time ever, if you win a medal at the Olympics, you're going to get paid a cash prize.
Yeah, look, I mean, it goes against everything that Baron Pierre de Coubertin was standing up for in 1896. But
it's only athletics, though, is it?
It's only athletics, and then some are saying other sports should be doing the same. But athletics is probably globally thinking, well, we've got to do more to attract more people into the sport. I mean, anyone who wins a gold medal in any sport these days, if you're in the old Eastern Bloc, for instance, you won a gold medal, you know, you were set up for life. You were made a captain in the army or a general in the army, and you got a salary and whatever. That was why so many Bulgarian weightlifters all wanted to cheat, because if they got a gold medal in the weightlifting, they'd go home and they'd be living the life of Riley for the rest of their lives. And, of course, you probably know the story of the Bulgarian weightlifter who was tested after he won his gold medal, and they came into him and he said, "Oh, how's my test go?" And I said, "Well, yeah, you haven't tested positive for any drugs, but you're pregnant." But anyway, look, we did mention Betty Cuthbert just a minute ago, a couple of times, and I'm reminded that, and this will tell you, I mean, with this prize money and with everything else, with the way athletes prepare with high performance coaches and so on, Betty Cuthbert stayed in the Olympic Village in Heidelberg on the outskirts, or then the outskirts of Melbourne, and before she won her gold medal, she caught the tram into the MCG carrying a brown paper bag with her sandwiches and a banana.
Hey, how about that?
High performance preparation.
Yeah.
So, anyway, look. I wonder whether this.
I wish them well too. I wonder whether this payment thing will spread, though. Do you think who's providing the money?
Well, the global athletics body is putting the money up, I mean, I mean, look, already, and we'll get to them in a minute. The Oli Roos, they already get paid, and
that's true.
And there's lots of, everybody's been paid for ages. All this is really doing is formalising it. There's been an awful lot of, back in the day, there were an awful lots of underhand payments. Ben Johnson, before he was found caught doping in 1988, he was on massive sponsorship deals and so on, as was Carl Lewis back then. So it didn't really matter that they didn't get anything for winning a gold medal. Everything was laid out before them in terms of sponsorships and all sorts of other commercial deals. But, yeah, it's interesting. And as I said, Baron Pierre de Coubertin and a few others since him would probably think it's awful. But, yeah, the Olympics is going to go through, I think, a whole range of changes, as we saw with Brisbane, you know, not building squillion-dollar stadia, you know, doing something else, because people have seen so many white elephant built over the course of time. I mean, I was in Athens not that long ago, and those stadia are not being used for very much at the moment. And Montreal, of course, we go back as far as Montreal, they were still paying it off last week.
Exactly. All right, look, on to a couple of other things before you go. Surfing. Kelly Slater is 52 years old. he's at the pro event in WA. He's got through an elimination heat.
Yeah, but he's
This is it.
He's been knocked out since then. This is his last, pretty much. Mm. I don't know, this has been said before, but I think this is pretty much his farewell tour. He was, you know, sent off with great style at Bell's Beach, and he's now been sent off in great style at Margaret River, carried off up the beach and so on. I mean, yeah, it's just astonishing that at the age of 52 he's still able to compete at this level after winning 11 world titles. I mean, Lane Beachley got 7 or 8. You know, there have been some great surfers, but this man is by far the best. And it's fantastic that the people of Western Australia gave him the send-off. I think he truly deserves. And there's a few others. Sally Fitzgibbons at the moment. She's fighting for her life at the moment. She's made it through to the round 16 via an elimination heat. But she's a former world number one from Australia. And she goes into this tournament in 14th spot, but she has to at least make the semi-finals and get herself up to 10th, because from here on in, they only take the best 10 for the rest of the season. And it's a bit like golf, you know. There's after 2 days in golf, there's the cut.
There's a cut.
Now this surfing cut. And Molly Picklum, well-placed. She's world number 3 going into this. Could well be back at world number 1 at the end of it. A few other Australians doing pretty well.
Okay.
But Kelly's... Kelly's, you know, it's a great way. It's a great farewell for him.
Indeed. Warwick Hadfield's with us. We're just rounding up the week in sport. Just on football, by the way, how are the Oli Roos going? Are we going to get to the Olympic Games or not?
Well, according to Tony Vidmar, the coach, we've made the right sort of start at this Asian Cup, Asian Under 23 Cup, from which the top three teams, so the two teams that make the finals plus the team that comes third, get automatic qualification for the Paris Olympics. Now, they've just played earlier today a nil-all draw against Jordan. Now, Tony Vidmar has his comments are that it's always tough to play your first game. The Jordanians, we'd like to attack, but we also were aware the Jordanians would have a solid defence, so we had to make sure we didn't let them in. And they didn't, but Australians didn't score either. So there are two games to go now. Lesser opponents, I would have thought, Indonesia. Less so, I think, Qatar. Mm-hmm. So he'll be hoping, I think, to get 3 points against both those sides and make sure that they end up on the top of Group A and thereafter get to the semi-finals and all the rest of the things that would take them to the Paris Olympics. It's always a tough thing, this under 23. I mean, Graham Arnold's been very, very vocal about the fact that we don't have a proper home of soccer football in Australia in the way that other sports do, where, you know, all the people can get together and learn the Australian way, et cetera, et cetera. And so what happens is the players all come together in international windows, and the Australian coach, or the Australian under 23 coach in this case, have to try and develop it all in a short period of time. But yeah,
it's always going to be the case when the best opportunities are elsewhere, isn't it?
Well, it is, and other countries have to put up with it as well. I mean, some of the best Argentines play in Messi and so on. They all play in different parts of the world. I've been past the training camp in Buenos Aires, and it's a spectacular setup where they all get together. And, you know, the AIS has been put forward as the home. Greg Blood, the AIS historian and expert on all things Australian sport, he believes it's there for the taking. But this doesn't seem to be the political will, or I don't know who just needs to give it the final push. But it's a great facility. Perhaps the Socceroos don't want to be terribly cold in winter. I don't know.
Yeah, this is the RAS in Canberra, you mean? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting you say that, the AIS in Canberra. It's just been through a great big review to make sure it stays in Canberra. Yeah. So, but you know, a lot of people have argued that it should go. Should be put out to other places in the world. I mean, the Queenslanders were making a big push for it on the basis that they had the next Olympics, and that, you know, everybody would be much happier to play in the warmth or to train in the warmth. And there may be an element of truth in that, but it's a great facility. And yeah, its track record's not bad in producing talent over the years. And I mean, I've been there on many occasions, and the sports science, they're very, very dedicated
They are.
People.
Exactly right. Exactly right. All right, Warwick, we'll leave it for another week, but terrific to talk. Thank you.
Great to talk to you, Philip. We'll catch up with you next week.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.